Here, shit gotta be fucking up with my brother on. Know what I'm saying? This shit crazy. This something. Y'all gotta let me know. And as he watch it too, cause sometimes they wanna fuck with me. But y'all gotta let me know if this shit jamming up or not. Know what I'm saying? Cause I'm over there talking to Pap. I ain't realized the shit was frozen. Yo, Nori, you got jokes, man. You got a lot of jokes, Nori. You got a lot of jokes. Success Clothing on the check-in. They try to stop us, man. They try to stop us, man. It's unstoppable. Nori over there laughing and shit. Man, they try to fuck with us, man. Yo, Pat, they stopped the shit. We talking.
Yo.
Yo, it's the weirdest shit. Me and you talking like.
I had a feeling something. I seen this shit just like, I'm like, what's this shit moving weird?
Yeah, shit crazy, like, man. I thought like some wild shit happened to Trump or some shit. Or something. I said, yo, everybody done left us.
I knew like, something was wrong, man. I said, what the fuck?
Yo.
I seen it when it happened. I'm like, what the? That's impossible.
Yo, I'm trying to keep a face like, yo, this shit. Yo. I said, yo, you want me to take it to a bet? I said, this is the lowest numbers I ever seen in my life. But you know what? It's my brother. Fuck y'all. I ain't fucking with my brother today. Nah, yo, I'm sitting here talking. I'm right. Like, fuck y'all. Y'all fuck with my brother. Fuck you.
You a real one.
Shit, man.
It was frozen. Yeah, it was frozen. Jeez, I seen it.
Thank God.
I seen when it happened, though. I looked. I said, what the fuck?
Nah, somebody kept saying it's frozen. Hey, yo, Papoose. Yeah. Man, Noriega keep saying you his cousin. Are you Nori's cousin? Yo, what's wrong with him?
Yo, Nori, stop, man.
Yo, Nori, you gotta relax.
Nori's
Yo,
crazy.
Nori, you gotta relax.
Shout out to Nori, man. Shout out to Nori, man.
Yo. How did that deal go sour when you signed with Ja?
Yo, Joe, listen, they hated on me, man. They hated on me. They didn't like us, bro. They didn't like us. Listen to me. I was on a path to greatness, man. I had a promising future in front of me. I can't blame it all on them because I was young and, you know, I was fresh off out the hood, fresh out off the street. So I had the streets around me and I had it in my mind too. So I was doing a lot of unprofessional things. But to be honest with you, as far as my music, I always loved music. I was focused. They hated on me. You know, when I first signed to the label, it was people in the label who was heard saying, yo, why did they sign him? You know, soon as his single come out, I'm getting him off the label. And I had Snoop Dogg on my single. It was produced by Scott Storch. You know what I mean? My single wasn't even out for a week.
Yo, let me tell you something. When I went to meet with Steve Rifkin, who's one of my mentors, to bring the Big Pun shit there, he told me that like 8-9 people had called him and told him, don't meet with me, that I'm an extorterer, I'm a criminal, I'm a this. And then Steve said, yo, I'm gangster too. You know what I'm saying? It actually turned me on, so I wanted to meet with you. So, and it's crazy because it's sad that people would take the time out.
Let me tell you what happened, Joe. Let me tell you what happened. When I first signed the job, right, we had Sidekicks or whatever back then. I got a message. It was a guy. I was in the process of signing. He said, Pat, you don't know me, but I'm a big fan of you, man. He said, I overheard this guy at Jive. I ain't gonna say his name. I ain't gonna put him on blast. He said, I overheard this guy. He was ranting in the room. He said that he's angry that they signed you to the label. And he said, I promise you, soon as his single drop, I'm getting him off the label. I told Slay about it. I kept it moving because it was an anonymous text. But when that shit unfolded like that, I throw it back to that text, to that message. I said, damn. I mean, when I got that message, that's exactly what happened. And
yo,
it got me off the
lane. Let me tell you something. But one thing about you is that you are so resilient. You believe in yourself more than anybody. You won't give up. You keep putting out music. constantly. And all these years later, you still putting out albums. Like, you just dropped the album Friday.
Yeah.
And yes. your freestyle, yo, your shit be incredible. When you be in the car talking that shit, and I'll be like, damn, my brother, killing that shit right there. Like,
thank you, man.
What motivates you to keep going like this? Like, and do you honestly believe, this is a joke for me, do you honestly believe that you can blow, or are you cool with being the king of the underground? Like, or do you think, yo, one of these shits might go?
Right. I'm going to tell you what it is. You know, first and foremost, I would do music without lights, cameras, action. So without the industry, I would still do music. It's something that I always love. I don't do it for money. You know what I'm saying? I don't do it for, you know, the money comes with it. We need money to feed our family. Let me not sit here and bullshit you. But that's not my motivation, you know what I'm saying, for music. I love music and I got a passion for it. But to answer your question honestly and straightforward, you know I got the short end of the stick, man. I was on the, like I said, I was on the path to greatness and they hated on me. You know, it wasn't just that. It was the fact that I was speaking up about Sean Bell. I was marching with Al Sharpton, Congressman Major Owens, you know, the hip-hop police. I put everybody on about the hip-hop police first. And they started coming to my shows and shutting my shows down early back then. So it was a lot of things, man, that got in my way.
Let's keep it real. Let me tell you something. I had a friend that was a cop. Hip-hop police, when it was created, they had a picture of Fat Joe like he was John Gotti. Pictures of my whole crew going down like we was some mafia shit, right? And they was like, and my man's a cop. He went in there. He was like, he seen that. He was like, yo, what's that? Mm-hmm. They like, yo, this is the guy. And they were like, guy? This guy's a family man, works hard every day. What are y'all talking about? And but they didn't know. Yo, bro, I was landing, especially when I had that beef with 50 Cent.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, I was landing and they were like in the movies, like in fucking Goodfellas and shit. I would land and they'd be like, hi, we're assigned to you today.
There you go.
I would go coach at the Rucker. They're sitting in the crowd waiting. I got a show. Mm-hmm. Eventually, let's keep it real, they started telling promoters, this guy's dangerous. So for New York, I couldn't even get booked in New York because they was on my ass like that.
Joe, this is what happened to me. They was telling promoters, if you book him here, we shutting this shit down. This is what they was doing to me.
Hold up. By the way, because this shit global. This around the world. There's a task force in New York City called the Hip Hop Police. If you ever seen, and they're really not bad guys. They're doing their job. But if you ever seen targeting, stereotyping, it's dumb. They have a police task force called Hip Hop Police.
Let me tell you this, the footage, I have footage. They brought horses to my show. I had a show. They
systemic racism horses
and turned everybody around. Like, this is on tape. They brought horses. I was the only one performing there. They came with horses, man. Like, but there was a lot of things we was into, man. You know what I'm saying? I changed my life now. I'm positive. It's black love, man. I ain't around none of that negativity no more, man. I'm mature. I grew up, man.
And I said like this, right? So, but they never really, like, I can't say they set me up. I can't say they put nothing on me. I can't say, you know, and they learned in time to give up. Because I'm totally legit. In time, they learned. So now when I see them, because I go somewhere where they just there, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like, all right, yo, I'm like, all right, like.
They told me, they said, yo, they told my wife when she came home, they said, yo, we glad y'all together, man. You know, y'all been staying out of trouble, things like that. Like, they saluted us, like, you know.
And part of the reason, let me tell you something, part of the reason I knew Remy was going to beat that last case, the fabricated shit, I was there.
Absolutely.
I was right there. Like, I was like, Yo, Pat, I'm there. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, a girl says she got hit by Remy, and I'm just, and then Remy got to get locked up. She's on parole. We thinking they're going to hold up. Like, it was so much fuck shit. But the reason why I always knew Remy would win that case is because we walked, when we left, this, we walked out with the hip-hop police.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bro, they was outside. Fight, there was any altercation, they would have seen it. They were standing right there. So when we walked out, I'm like, I seen all them dudes when I was walking out. All right, come on, going to my car.
Right.
No incident, no nothing. And
crazy.
It was real sad how they did Remy with that one. Mm-hmm. Like that was a
me and you were sitting in the courtroom together, man. You know,
yo,
when she,
Pat,
when she,
let me
when she,
tell you something about my too, sister, man.
Too deep, man. Me and
I
you,
have
man.
Her. That's right. Word. I you know have what I'm her. Saying? And what I tell you, it's $1 million bail I'm taking out.
It's going right. down. It's whatever happens.
Yo, Pat. Yo, he was dead. Yo, Pat. We sitting in court, and Pat said, yo, Joe, I said, I wish they would give $1 million bail. Try to bail out right now in 10 seconds.
Yo, Joe. That felt so good, man, because, you know, before, you know, through a lot of them situations, man, I was just sitting there by myself. It felt good to have somebody with me, man. Real talk,
right,
man. So I want to thank you for that.
On that. So for those of all, we don't really want to go open no wounds, but me and Remy have fell out. Really, she fell out with me. I ain't even going to lie to you to this day. I don't even know why. So I go, and now that you've been around us enough, you know, yo, Joe ain't do it. But it's okay. Right. She wanted to smoke, fine. All right, cool.
So, smoke, it's crazy.
No. And then, so she gets locked up. And I'm not going to lie to you. We had just fought and all that. It was nasty. I would have told her to take that 1-3.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying? I would have told
Joe.
Her.
I was so confused when that happened with her, man, because, you know, she was to a certain extent by herself. So I was trying to do everything I could do to help the situation, but I'm not from the Bronx. I'm a Brooklyn nigga. So I'm like, yo, what's going on out here? Like, where's everybody at? Like, these niggas don't know somebody that knows somebody that knows somebody that could fix this and make it go away. You understand what I'm saying? So I was doing the best I can to try to, you know, alleviate it. But exactly what you said. You know, I put that option in front of her one day, like, yo, they're offering you 3. You don't want to take. She went crazy. I'm not taking nothing. No way. You know, I'm going to fight this. And I'm like, sure.
I would have did the same thing you did. I would have made her take the 3. And we would have went to visit her every week. And it would have just been that. Because there's no way you're not taking 3 years. And you know they all coming at you. And you know, Remy. Yo, let me tell you something. Remy the real deal. Remy's a...
I know.
She's a female. She's a... And I don't want y'all to take this the wrong way. I don't know how to explain it. But she think like a guy even though she's a female.
It's facts.
And she...
She ain't scared of nothing. That's not even an option.
Some things in my life that was, you know, way years ago, but... She's put me in compromised positions to where I almost got killed several times because of her. Like, yo, let me tell you, I won't say no name, but
right.
The pound for pound, illest street dudes ever live. Like, I really want people to know, these people really don't know, and I can't really be talking on a show like that,
how we
get down. So it was one of the illest of all time, drug dealers, street crews, this and this and that. They walking down 100 deep. We walking down 3 deep. It's me, Remy, and my man Tone on this. And we walking, and they was fronting on Mad Rap Crews. I don't want to say who, but they was chasing rappers. They came on a bully shit.
Okay.
Right? And so they walking through. We walking 3 deep. They 100 deep. These guys are probably worth $1 billion. These the worst. I can't say who. They probably the worst guys ever. Right?
Like, right.
So one of them look at me. I ain't gonna front. The main dude that everybody worships, They don't know who it is, but everybody is like, they the illest guys in the world.
Right.
The main dude looks at me and go, yo, it's all about such and such.
Okay.
And they're 100 deep.
Mm.
I'm not going to lie to you. I try to act like I ain't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still walking. No, they not. It ain't no, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They like, yo, it's all about such and such. So I look at the dude. He says it again real loud. He's looking at me. They 100 deep. I said, yo, bro, this is Terror Squad. Y'all know what the okay. fuck this is.
right? Right.
We 3D. They 100 deep. They just finished chasing
mm-hmm.
the toughest New York rappers in the world down the block.
Oh, man.
Real talk. Ask Remy off the... So right. then I go, so the point is, we could have left it at that. They said what they said. They did the, we did mm-hmm. the. Remy was like, fuck that. We got to give it to him. I'm like, what? She's like, they gotta get it. I'm like, we 3D.
Wow.
I'm not gonna continue the story.
Right.
It went down.
Right, okay.
And then we're friends now, everybody's crossing. We don't even talk about the story. I never tell nobody this story.
Right.
This is legendary.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It'll hurt a lot of feelings if I told that story. Like, people would die at that story.
Wow.
I'm tired of Fat Joe. He's full of shit. Let's stop. Let's right. it. But we gave it up. You know
now, that's her though, Joe. She don't back down, man. Like, Remy is different, man. Real talk.
Oh no, she don't. she got me in trouble so many times. I'm like, yo, I'm like, yo, Ram, what can I do with you, man? Like, you like, right. yo, nah, you gotta get it. So, mm-hmm.
Even with that situation, I asked her. I was like, yo, you know what I'm talking about? I was like, yo, you want this to go down? You know, the average female would have been like, nah. She looked me in my eyes and said, yes. I said, oh. It got to go down. We had to smoke.
She wanted to smoke. No, win or lose. Yes. She wanted to smoke.
Yes, bro.
And so, I know what you're dealing with. So, mm-hmm. we all know the story. You went to visit her every week.
Yeah. Right.
No man. When I say no man, no man would do what you did. None. I mean, zero. Damn. Zilch. On the planet mm-hmm. Earth would be visiting somebody for 8 mm-hmm. years. At that, you said the correction officers used to tell me, yo, why are you coming up here? Why are you showing my love? Why you break that down to us?
Yeah, man, because you know, when she was on Rikers Island, we had the situation where they banned me from visiting her. You know, I went to see her.
They caught you with a key. A handcuff key.
I had a skeleton key, man. I came there in my suit. I came there to get married. I had my mother with me and my mother-in-law. It was 3 of us. I came in there. I had, you know how you have a skeleton key on your key? I came in there. I put my key on the tray to get searched. They searched me. So one of the officers picked up my key. They said, yo, what's this? You can't have this. He looked at it. He said, oh, go ahead. Matter of fact, don't worry about it. Gave me my keys back. We went across on the boat. On the bus. Soon as me, my mother-in-law, my mother got over on the bus, police ran down on me. Yo, no, the wedding is canceled. You know, and they put me in a cell. Threw me in the cell for about a couple hours or whatever. They let me out. I get off the bus. The Daily News, the New York Post, they slapping pictures in my face. The next day, I'm on the front page of the paper. Papoose tries to break Remy out of jail with a handcuff. I said, this is ridiculous, man.
Yeah,
are y'all kidding
me? My thing is,
what?
My
thing is, how many, they watch too many movies.
Yeah, but you got to understand that mm-hmm. they try to break the families up.
Yes.
Once again, this systemic racism comes up because.
Yes.
So, like, You all right?
Oh, well, let me finish. Let me finish the story. So this happened, right, Joe? So I lose my visitation rights. So I get on my pen game now. I'm writing letters to Albany. I got my lawyer on it. I'm talking about I'm around the clock because I appealed it. I'm fighting. I'm like, excuse me, how can y'all take my visitation? If I would have tried to break out of jail, I would have been locked up. Y'all didn't lock me up. They threw me in a holding cell over a skeleton key. Yo, Joe, I'm writing essays to Albany, fighting and fighting. Boom, eventually I got my visitation back because my pen game is kind of all right. I studied that little library. I knew what I was doing. Long story short, so I hadn't seen Remy in about like a while, bro. I'm losing my mind. You know what I'm saying? I can't visit her. Nothing, bro. I'm not even going to lie to you.
Let me ask you something. Would you ever, let's keep it real. This is a joke moment. Before Remy, with other girls, would you ever sleep in the round? Did you ever cheat on a girl? Like,
when I was younger, man, I wasn't the man that I am, Joe. I learned, as I matured in life, I got better and I became more responsible and I became a better man. So that's why I'm where I'm at today.
Is there a woman that you broke her heart somewhere that can't fucking believe that this guy loves this girl like this? Is there a girl you dissed in Bed-Stuy or fucking East New York? And she's like, yo, this guy here, this, I can't believe this shit.
Nah, you know what it was, Joe? I grew up, both of my parents were married. You know what I'm saying? When I was a kid, I seen pictures on the wall of my mom's and my pop's wedding. My pop's had the Jerry curl. My mom, he had the fly suit on. My mom's had the ill white dress. So I said, damn, one day I want to get married. So that's why that's important for your kids to see that. You know what I'm saying? Because I was raised like that. You know what I mean? I never would go too far as disrespecting a woman or all of that. But I want to finish the story.
You was always a good guy?
I can't say I was always a good guy, no. Like I said, I matured into being the man that I am. And that's why I always tell all ladies, it comes with maturity. You know, as a man gets older in life, he's going to see things more clearer. When I was younger, I made some mistakes. I got to be honest. You know what I'm saying? I made a lot of mistakes, and I did things that, you know, I'm not too proud of. And those are the things that made me the man I am today that made me say, you know, I don't never want to live like that again. I want to straighten my life out, and I want to settle down, and I want to have a family, and I never want to violate my family. But nothing or nobody, no woman, nobody is worth it, bro. So my past experiences made me the man I am today, bro. But let me finish the story, Joe. So I get my visitation back, right? I finally can see Remy, bro. I'm excited, man. I go up to Bedford Hills. You know what I'm saying? I get up there. They say, no, you can't visit her. I said, oh, man, I got to write again to Albany. Some other bullshit they came up with. Got my visitation. I finally get in there to see Remy. I'm waiting. Yo, she come out, Joe. You ever seen the footage, man, when Bobby got locked up and Whitney came out and ran and hugged him? That's how she ran to me, man, like that. Like, she came running out the back. She jumped on me, man. We hugged each other. She had lost mad weight at that time, man. Like, I hadn't seen her in so long because I was visiting her every day on Rikers Island before the bullshit. So at that point, I got my visitation rights. I was coming to see her every day. So one day I came, the police, and this is what you was talking about. She said, come here. Very rude, bro. Very disrespectful. Just told me to come here. Come here. I said, who? Me? Yeah, you. I come up to the desk. Why you keep coming up here every day? I said, excuse me? So in my mind, I'm like, this is another trick. If I fall for this and feed into this, I'm going to lose my visitation again. Let me remain humble. I said, excuse me, my wife is here. She said, she ain't going nowhere. Stop coming up here every day. I looked at her, Joe. I just went and sat down in my seat, man. I said, you know what? Ain't nothing worth me losing my visits.
Nah, it's because they're miserable. They're miserable. Mm-hmm. And then when somebody finds you broke the law, you doing time, but they try to make a way for your family to do time. They try to make it uncomfortable for you to visit. It's so crazy. They want them to really be living dead. They don't want nobody to really come see them. And I speak to Remy all the time. And Remy tells me how people wasn't keeping. She said after the first year, the second year, as the years go by, she said people, it was you in bedtime. And she said her own family, people was falling off the map, acting like, oh, she got 8 years to do. She ain't never coming back. She's this, that. And it'll teach you some real shit. But you stood there, and you was there, and you were supporting her, and she needed that. You know, she needed, because she was really locked up. Like, Remy went in there busting her hammer. Yeah. Allegedly.
Allegedly,
I'm sure
right.
She ain't do it, right? But, right. All the girls in there with her was killers.
Yeah, That's a fact.
She went in there, a famous girl. Mm-hmm. She went in there, a famous husband.
Mm-hmm.
And you got people who kill mm-hmm. right next to her, and she got to give it up. You know Remy.
Yeah, yeah.
Remy gonna give it up.
Yeah, that's a fact. It's a couple times I came to see her, she was in the box. I couldn't get mad at her because we would lose our trailer visits because of that. But I'm not in there with her, bro. I can't get mad. We would lose our trailers for that moment. I'm like, what happened? She like, yo, one thing led to another. I had to do what I had to do.
And you know so we saying? Turn around and we watch. You come home, right? She comes home. Well, you come home too because you finally can fucking be home and not be on a
yeah,
bus.
Yeah, man.
Dated some shit.
There you go. There you
made
go.
8 years. You was locked up mm-hmm. too. You was going up there every week. Yo, I can't mm-hmm. do this. I can't do that. You know, mm-hmm. for your wife. You come home, right? And then I know I met with Remy a couple of times. Remy was meeting with me. I don't know if you know, but she was meeting with me alone. We was having punches and shit all over me and her talking. And, you know, just talking like mm-hmm. nothing about music. Nothing, just brother, sister shit.
Right,
and
right.
She tells me, I'm going to do Love and Hip Hop. Now, before you guys did Love and Hip Hop, it was the Flavor Flav show, a fucking train wreck. It was like it was the worst.
Bag.
I'm keeping it a buck, and I love Mona Scott. She good people. But that shit was there. It was like, it was the most buffoonery I ever seen. And then mm-hmm. something like, yo, sis. Are you gonna you know you're a real fucking rapper with number ones? Like
mm-hmm.
the fuck are you going on Love and Hip Hop for? She was like, no, right. we're gonna do it different. They know not to play with me, they mm-hmm. know this and this and that. And so you go on Love and Hip Hop, and the world hears the story about how you hold it down and how y'all love each other and how you want a kid, mm-hmm. and this and then and it's the first time that black love was projected in that way, so impactful for all of hip hop to see. Because mm-hmm. the only time we see a black person on TV is mm-hmm. in Cops. Getting locked up. First 48.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The dumbest yeah. motherfuckers you ever seen. Like,
yeah.
I'm keeping it real. Sometimes you be watching mm-hmm. First 48, you be like, no. Shut up, you need a lawyer.
Right.
Cop right. come out. If he would have never said that, he would have went home.
He would have been good. I hate watching that shit, man.
I hate seeing shit like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, me too.
That's what it is. We watch the news. The guy robbed the gas station. The black mm-hmm. guy.
Right.
And so, you on a show that promotes that shit. Girls yeah. fighting each other, this, that. Every, mm-hmm. And you guys show a Romeo and Juliet story.
Yeah, man.
And the world eats this shit up. They even jacked you. If you don't say it and you want to be humble, I don't give mm-hmm. a fuck. They always jack these guys with the Black mm-hmm. Love TV show, Oprah Winfrey and all them. We yeah. need to check.
Yeah.
We need to
yeah.
check because y'all created that term, Black yeah, Love.
They stole it.
And so you together, you not falling out of love. You guys are together day and night. Every time I call her and I say a joke, I hear your voice laughing in the background. Every time I call you, she start right. laughing in the background. Like,
right.
Y'all yeah. locked in.
Yeah.
And, it's a beautiful story of defying the odds and do, especially a guy. Because I'm not going to lie to you. Women, you know, women cheat too. Men ain't shit. Women ain't shit. But there's most likely a chance of a woman going to see a guy locked up in jail and keeping it real with her husband. Shout out my cousin Carmencita. You know, she did 10 years with her man. Oh, wow. And I can't honestly say I seen my cousin cheat or ever in a funny position. So whenever I see Paul, who's my uncle, who's not my uncle, who's my cousin, he's home now, very successful. I'm like, yo, Paul, you got lucky.
Wow.
You got lucky with my cousin. She kept it a buck with you.
She held beautiful. It down. She held
She's
it down.
She's beautiful. She's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Hair to her ass. She could have been all out here. She kept
right.
it real with you, but he treats her like a queen. Beautiful story. Same thing with you and Remy. Mm-hmm. The baby's growing so beautiful. What do you want to do for the future? Where do you see the future going?
I see the future, man, you know, of us just keep continuing to grow, man. It's important in a marriage to make sure you continue to grow together. You know what I'm saying? And also, just keep opening businesses and planning for our kids, planning ahead, man. I want to continue to grow as a family, keep investing our money properly. You know what I'm saying? And keep doing what we're doing, you know. And you spoke about the Love and Hip Hop situation. When Remy was locked up, they was trying to get me to do the show. They wanted to document what was going on. They got wind of it. And we was like, nah, we're not doing that. They throw drinks on each other. But when she came home, we was like, you know what? Let's just do it. Yo, Joe, I never lie to you, bro. When I filmed Love and Hip Hop, I was prepared to get clowned. I said, yo, when this come out, man, they going to kill me, man. They going to destroy
me. Don't say nothing. Stop that right there. Don't say nothing. Keep that thought. Don't forget. I got to say something. They always say I talk too much, but I got to say something. I'm in jail. I'm doing my little 4 months. I'm watching they put on Love and Hip Hop. When I see Peter Guns come on that screen, I get up from my table. I go in my cell and I almost cry. Because I know Peter Guns from being a real dude from the street. I know him. He's my friend. I love Peter Guns.
Shout out to Peter Guns.
But when I seen that, I walked in my cell and I almost cried. I was like, fuck, they got Peter Guns on this shit. Because before that, it was a train wreck. They was just playing motherfuckers. They was dissing motherfuckers. Yeah. I was like, damn, my man had to take that fucking check right there. I would take a Love and Hip Hop check 2021. But at that time, it wasn't it. You guys legitimized it. Now we got, you know, Juelz, real rappers and all that on the show. I'm not against Love and Hip Hop right now. But at that time, I could not believe it. I was like, yo, they got a real nigga up there on Love and Hip. Like, I had to go. I couldn't take it.
Yo, Joe, right? That was our mentality. So when we went on the show, you know, we said they're not going to make us look crazy because we're not going to make ourselves look crazy. So we alleviated that thought. We went on the show. So they documented our real lives, you know, how we live, the love we have for each other. When Remy was away, one thing we learned was all we got is us, man. So, you know, and all we ever had was communication because we couldn't do nothing. I couldn't, on a visit, put your hands on the table. I couldn't touch you. I couldn't do nothing. So long story short,
The whistle don't always come out.
right.
Bigger than a joke moment. All we got is us.
Oh, now we learned that, Joe. We learned that, man. All we got is us, man. And
they try to help everybody. I see you.
We learned how to communicate.
Nori's still stuck. Nori still come see me and Mr. Child. Yo, bring your wife. Let's have dinner. He come with 30 left rack dudes. In Miami, Mr. Child.
Right.
He do not want to give it up.
Shout out to Nori. That's my cousin, man.
Entertainment. He ain't trying to hear that shit.
But yo, now, Joe, let me say this real quick about Love and Hip Hop. I love Love and Hip Hop, man. Yo, I don't got nothing bad to say. Anybody got something bad to say about Love and Hip Hop? I beg you, don't say it around me. Hey, Joe, I made a lot of money.
I love Love and Hip Hop.
Yo,
I
Joe.
I love Love and Hip Hop. Because let me say you this. Guys made it legit.
Yo, let me say this. I've toured overseas. I've did shows all across the U.S. My first deal was $1.5 million. All that didn't go in my pocket, but I got some of it. I've done a lot of things. I've done songs with some of my people I idolized as a child. You, G-Rap, Nas, Busta, the list goes on. I haven't made as much money in music that I made on television.
Hallelujah.
I love Love and Hip Hop.
Alhamdulillah.
We was able to influence the culture in a positive way, more importantly.
But let me tell you love. Something. So I'm walking with you, right? We do the show in LA. It's the Beyonce show. They asked us to rock. Khaled, Beyonce. So me and Remy, we do this all the way up. And you got to walk through the crowd to get to the car. I don't know why. You got to walk through the crowd. There's no back way.
Right.
Pat, Remy, oh, he's the nicest in the world. Oh, Remy. Oh, and I was like, and I know rap, love. And I said, holy shit, this TV shit different. I'm like, Jesus Christ, this shit different. And oh, Pap, he's so nice. And I'm like, I'm walking with y'all like, yo, we got all the way up the number one song in the country. We talking about all the way up. The motherfucker looking like, I was like, yo, do I gotta get on Love & Hip Hop?
Yo, Joe, they was. Yo, Joe, they was tired of that. Yo, I see the biggest of celebrities, man, and females, ladies, like, they come up to me. I love the love you show her. I think the world, like you said, it was a train wreck. I think the world was tired of seeing our culture depicted in a bad way. When they see genuine love on that screen, I think they appreciated it, man. So it was a good thing, man. Like I said, I was prepared to get clowned, but when that first episode aired, I got nothing but love. I was on one knee proposing. They never seen that side of me, man. They was like, yo.
Yo, you know what? It's crazy for me. And we're going to end this because I got another guest.
Yeah, let's do it. Endangered
Species is the album. It is.
Yes, man. Yo, right? Thank you, Joe.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. You invite me to the wedding. Mm-hmm. And I'm used to, I'm not going to lie to you, I'm used to Joe and Remy.
Mm-hmm.
No. Since she's 16 years old, this wow. Joe and Remy, I wouldn't even let dudes rap to her. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? It's my little sister. Whenever we show up, you know, the first time we did the shout mm-hmm. out the whole the BX Fight Club, when we did it right after you,
back.
This is different. When you two are together, this is different.
Right, right.
And so you know what I'm talking about. So I
nah, I seen it. Wedding, I seen it.
You getting married, and I had to fall back like, yo, it's Pat and Remy's wedding.
Wow.
You
wow.
know, and I'm just like, this ain't the Fat Joe Remy Ma show.
Okay.
Pat Poos and Remy's wedding. So I got to stay mm-hmm. there and watch the wedding and just enjoy it. And right. It was weird for me. It was the first time. It wasn't like, because you know, when Remy caught that little charge, when she was walking in there, they knew Joe was coming. They,
oh, they yeah.
Like, oh, there he go. Yeah. I heard me and you was together.
Mm-hmm.
I heard
that's a fact.
In the hallway, like, there he go.
Right, he, right.
Uh-oh.
Uh-huh.
Joe crack up in this bitch. Like, you heard it? I was with you. They're like, oh, no.
No, that's a fact. They knew the vibe. That's
yo,
a
they,
fact,
yo,
man.
They, it is something with their brothers. It's going down pat, too. Like, and so when you're doing the wedding, I'm there with my wife, but I'm like, damn, man, it ain't the Fat Joe and Remy show.
Yo, Joe, let me tell you something, though. When she was about to come home, she told me, she sat me down one day. She said, yo, I want to know what you think about this. She said, yo, I want to fix it with my brother. I said, hell yeah. You need to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, on some real shit, bro. Like, she genuinely told me that. And I said, absolutely, you need to do that.
And then
that.
I see you for the first time.
Yeah.
And I go, yo, what's up?
Right,
you're
right.
You said, oh, this guy being a nice guy. I said, yo, what's up, man? What's going on? I'm like, all right, cool. Yo, we had, and then we like, you know, it didn't take mm-hmm. much.
Nah, for real, man.
Jail and to become family and brothers.
Nah, it's a fact. But, like, family for real family, though, man. Like, on another
yeah,
level.
Yeah, but what happens is I really love you, man. And it's,
nah,
it's,
I love
it's
you,
a
bro,
scary
for real.
Thing. It's
it
a
is,
scary
man.
Thing because I really love you.
Nah, and, I love you, brother.
And
real.
I say that all the time. And
nah,
you behind your back, my quote-unquote crew, which is now your crew.
That's a fact.
They say nothing but beautiful things about you. Like, you know.
Nah, those are my guys, man.
You know these guys love to hate. You know, you know what I mean? Perhaps the greatest. He's my guy.
Nah, these are my
he's
brothers,
what?
Man.
And they be like, yo. I be like, yeah, yo, he's the best.
Uncle Dan, Rich, Percy, all those are my guys, man. Like,
I never
like,
caught a
I,
guy.
Like,
yo, mm-hmm. let me tell you something, Pat. I never caught a bad rumor. I never caught somebody. I don't even know how to explain it to you, bro. You are flawless at what you're doing. Keep that shit up, cause mm-hmm. You are impeccable.
Thank you,
bro. You are a man's man. The true version of a stand-up guy.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, I love you, my brother. Peace.
I love you. Endangered Species, all digital platforms, #6 on iTunes, and we're doing good on Spotify.
Let me ask you a question. Is that the black Indian behind you? Who's that right there?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, my grandmother, she named me Papoose as a child because I looked like an Indian baby. She died from cancer, so, you know, I kept the name when I came into music. When I first went to school, Joe, and I found out my real name wasn't Papoose, I was so confused because she named me that from a baby. But, you know, she died from cancer. Rest in peace, Vivian Strong. I kept my name. That's the Indian baby. That's my logo, Papoose logo.
That's amazing, my brother. I love you, man.
Love you, my brother. Peace and love. Thank you. Peace. Thank you for having me. Peace.
Brooklyn, stand the fuck up, and you don't know who I know. You don't know who I know. Well, you know I know Pat, but amazing. Amazing guy. If it's, he's not that, then I'm telling you, I am shocked. Like, I've never been around a better guy. More loyal husband, more better family man in my life. It is unbelievable. And it does exist, ladies. True love does exist. And the fact that you could say, hey, this is us. Till we die, this is us. And it's amazing to see that work out in my goddaughter. You know, kids know when you love them. Kids know. You know, shout out to the mayor, Michael Mad, Drop Dead Beats. Listen, when you see my guy Dre from Kool & Dre, you know, Family Ties, the album, go stream it. His little daughter is just not even one, but her face, she knows dad loves me. And it's so important to keep the family together and support our kids and love our kids. And so when you see my goddaughter, she looks like dad loves me. He loves my mother. And that's how it's really supposed to be. And even that Godpapa loves me. And it gives you a certain confidence to win in life and to go on life, because life is hard, different things thrown at us. But when you instill that love in the house, it's nothing like it. I got one more guest. Cool Grims. Yo, I got one more guest, don't go nowhere. I want you to hear this compelling story. This is a very, yo, Mayor, make sure my guy's here. Yeah, don't let nobody lie to you. Don't let nobody lie to you and make you think, oh, it's cool. Hey, I got two other baby moms that unfortunately we had to part ways. It wasn't right. I'm not proud of that. But if I sit here and tell you that it didn't affect the kids, it's a lie. And so now divorce is so easy and everybody is so, you know, it ain't nothing. 2J's, where you at? You know what I'm saying? Where everybody's acting like it don't affect the kids. That's a lie. It affects the kids. Where's 2J at? I don't see him. So you see kids acting different in school. You see kids acting different in church. You see kids acting different. Don't. I don't see my man 2J's. And so I don't want, don't lie. And so if you got to get a divorce and you're miserable, do it.
Family, what's good? Yo, what's good? How you been, bro?
My brother, I was up the other day. Everybody, it's 2J's. I'm going to tell you a story. It's a story about redemption. It's a story about never giving up. is a story about coming from nothing and building an empire. And it's not a story about a fairy tale American history story. It's a brother that looks like you and me, who went through some real shit, and now he's very, very successful. 2 days, I watched your tutorials or whatever it is in YouTube, and I said to myself, I got to have this guy on my show because this guy's amazing. 2 days, where are you from originally?
I'm from Jersey. I'm from Perth Amboy. Yeah,
you're so from Jersey?
Yeah.
And I see the Puerto Rican tattoo on your arm. So you Boricua?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So two J's. You are a sneaker collector. More than that, you own sneaker store. Break this down to me.
Yeah, so I own a shop called Urban Necessities that's based in Vegas. Urban Necessities is a play on the United Nations. It takes all walks of life. And we've been able to build it straight out the mud, man. And fortunately, a lot of people have been rocking with us over the last couple of years and allowing us to grow and to be that outlet. It's been a lot of fun.
You know what's crazy, 2Js, is that you also have these videos where you go around to like Sneaker Con and everywhere, and you teach kids how to buy these sneakers at the right price so you could take them back to your store and sell them for more, buy low, make profit. And with every play you do, I see the inspiration. And all these kids come up to you and say, I sell sneakers because of you. I love what you do. How does that feel to come from humble beginnings to Asian kids, white kids? Everybody come up to you like, yo, 2Js, I look up to you, man. I look up to what you do.
Nah, it's still very surreal. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't start doing what I was doing for the likes or for people to start following or supporting. I was just doing it because, one, I had a genuine interest in sneakers, and I thought that that would be a way that I could provide. It just snowballed into this, like, system where I've been able to use my platform to help others grow. What I've noticed is a lot of the people that are rocking with me, a lot of the people that are coming up to me, have a lot of the hardships and similar struggles as I did when I was a kid or a teenager growing up. Like I want to know, 2Js,
I know you was homeless. How did you fall into, how did you get homeless? Like, I need the real shit. This is the fat joke.
Yeah. So, you know, when I was younger, I had a daughter who just turned 18 yesterday. And like most people, At that time, I was struggling with how people were telling me to do stuff. I didn't want to hear it. I figured, like, my way worked all the time. Had a falling out with baby moms. Baby moms moved to Vegas. And, you know, I got into the vices that we all do, right? I was heavy drinking, popping pills. I didn't want to hear shit. And I lost everything. And one day, my moms was like, yo, Jay, you're not getting any younger. You need to be closer to your kid. You need to be a man. You need to grow up. So she gave me $20 and a plane ticket, and I flew to Vegas, right? I tried to make it work with baby moms. It didn't really work out my first 6 months.
$20 and a plane ticket.
Yo, all I had was like a change of clothes. That was it. And I tried to make it work with baby moms. She didn't want to hear it. I figured I'd take my $20, put it in a slot machine, turn it into $100. Maybe I'll find somebody selling some weed. Then I'll just start selling weed. That didn't work. I spent my $20 before I even sat down. So my first 6 months, I'm sleeping on a park on Charleston and Maryland Parkway, and I'm walking miles to the strip, panhandling, sneaking in a hotel.
How do you eat? Are you on drugs at this point?
Nah, I've never, I've never done drugs, bro. Outside of weed, like back in the day, I've never done drugs, right? So I'm eating out of trash cans. I'm sneaking into hotels, shit like that. Showering like in front of forum shops, that little pool right there, I'm jumping into that. You know, and it hits your pride, right? So I start panhandling, and one day I walk into Fashion Show Mall, which is across the street from the Wynn, and I see a bunch of dudes standing in line for sneakers. Now the store is open, and I'm like, yo, why are y'all standing in line? Right? So some of these dudes are explaining to me, yo, we're standing in line because we can't justify paying the resale. And the other dudes are like, yo, I want to charge the resale. So I'm looking at this line, and they're standing in line for days, like 2 days. So I'm like, yo, which one of y'all want to go home? And I'll stand in line for y'all. Y'all can do whatever you got to do, and I'll just make a couple dollars. So then I took that little money, bought a cooler, started slinging water, started panhandling, selling water, standing in line for people, and I eventually got off the street. I found like a weekly. I started staying in this weekly, cleaned myself up, befriended a couple people, got a job, jobbed hopped, and I mean, it was forever ago, but...
So how did you get into the sneakers? So you were standing online, and then you realized, holy shit, these people really making money off these sneakers?
I understood there was resale, but I didn't understand it like I do now, right? So I get a job, I job hop, I get sick, I start having seizures, I go on FMLA for like 6 months, and like most people, I'm living outside my means. Right? I'm in an apartment I could barely afford, driving a car I could barely afford. Like, I'm literally living check to check. So the money that I had saved up over these 6 months that I'm not working, I'm like exhausting everything. So I met wifey right when I got evicted out of my apartment. And so 2 weeks into dating my wife, which was about 8 years ago,
let me ask you something. She's Mexican. She's Asian. Nah, what is she?
She's Filipino Hawaiian.
I knew it, though. But go ahead. My daughter says I think she's Mexican.
She's Asian. Like Filipino Hawaiian, Japanese.
I'll
like
tell you what she is. Fucking focus. But keep going. Yeah. Tell me, you met her 2 weeks later.
So 2 weeks later, I now move in. I'm evicted on my apartment, car repo. I'm moving in with her and her mom, which is now my mother-in-law. She's like, Jay, what are you going to do? This is like November 2013. So I'm like, yo, I think I'm going to try to sell sneakers, right? So I go to a doctor's appointment because I'm still having these issues with these seizures at the time. And while I'm sitting in the doctor's office, a pop-up ad came up, and it was for the Area 72 Barclayposit that was coming out the following February. And that shit blew my whole mind. I was like, yo, this is crazy. The shoe's amazing. I shoot a text to wifey. I'm like, yo, I think this is going to be the shoe that we're going to sell. Like, I want to try to sell this shoe. So for 3 months before the shoe drops, I'm using her car, driving while she's working, going to every single sneaker store in the city saying, remember the name, remember the face. The day's going to come. I'm going to buy every shoe. Now, to some, I'm sure it sounded like I was bumping my gums and talking on my ass, but some people
gave me... Hold on 1 second. What you did is called speaking it into existence.
You already.
So I know a lot of people who always speaks it into existence. So yesterday, I was on a Zoom, Hispanic Heritage Zoom, with Titi Torres and Nori, and I said, you know what? I'm going to be a billionaire. And they looked at me like I was crazy. I said, no, I'm going to be a billionaire. Like my man J.R. Riding just says, another day, another billion. And so I spoke it loud, because that's what I want to do. You know what I'm saying? And you got to speak it to existence in order to get there. Continue to, Jace. So now this sneaker, this Barclay sneaker, you got all your eyes on that.
I'm losing sleep over this shoe, bro. Like, I don't even have the money for the shoe. Wifey's like, yo, Jay, how much is this shoe? I'm like, it's $275. She's like, Jay, you don't even got a job. What you talking about sneakers for? Like, leave it alone. So I get my little income tax money. She's heard me talking about this shoe for like 3 months. She puts a couple dollars up. We go stand in Nike Town and Forum Shops, 3 a.m, right? There's a bunch of releases. It's the Barclayposit, a KD, some Air Forces, Kobe's, all sorts of stuff. I just wanted the Barclay. So wifey's like, yo, go talk to the line and see who's buying what. And whoever ain't buying the Barclay, we'll give them the bread to buy pairs. So the initial plan was to buy 3, sell 2, keep 1. We winded up buying 18, bro. I ain't never posted sneakers. I ain't even have the Instagram yet. Like, I just posted these shoes. We sold 18 pairs in 6 hours for $250 profit each pair. And she was like, yo, I think you're
right. How much money you made off of that?
Shit, a couple stacks in 6 hours, and we was like, damn.
You ain't never seen a couple of stacks in your life before that, huh?
Not like, not that quick, not that easily. right? Like, so she's like, yo, do it again next week. So next week I go, and I don't know my left from my right. I'm standing in line for Pink Phone Posit Restock, right? Then I'm like, oh, I'm going to try eBay. And then I'm like, eBay, the way that it's set up, like, there's all these fees involved based off of, like, what fonts you use, what promos you use, all this other shit. Long story short, I stood in line 9 hours for a $7 profit. So the second week, it was like a punch in the mouth. You know what I mean? And I just kept going.
The taste of reality, yo, it ain't always this sweet. You got to know what you're waiting for.
Right. So that instantly made me be like, I'm not fucking with eBay. I'm going to open my own website. I started 2J's Kicks at storeenvy.com. I was paying $7 a month for the site. I was using construction paper for backgrounds. I was taking pictures with a lamp in one hand, an iPhone in the other one to try to clean it up. I was looking what all these little resellers was doing in my community and outside of my community. And I'm like, why wouldn't I want to shop with them? What would make me stand out different? And so I started signing myself up for everything no one else wanted to do, right? So now I'm doing the sneaker thing for 6 months. I'm making money, but I'm not making money. We arguing 24/7 over shoes. I'm borrowing her car. I'm putting miles. I'm spending gas. Like, but I'm just, all my money, I'm putting it back into sneakers, back into sneakers. And I'm keeping shoes. And the argument was, yo, Jay, you got no money. Why are you still buying and keeping shoes? And I'm like, yo, it's like my business suit. I have to have these shoes. You're not gonna buy the hottest shoes from the dude wearing slides in a wife beater.
So you start from there, right? And then you become this super buyer. So I'm watching. So you go from where you said, Joe, I used to wash myself in the fountain. And I appreciate you, and all our listeners and viewers appreciate you. Because we need that earnest. We need that honesty, that real shit. Because there's so many people watching that all they got is a phone. There's somebody out there watching right now that is very intelligent. And they need the motivation. They're watching right now. They're in Memphis. They're in the Bronx. They're all over watching this story. And they saying to themselves, wow, man, I could turn this shit around. That's why I invited you to this. So you go from that point to now, I see you buying $52,000 in one stand of sneakers, $37,000, $26,000. Like, you just, if I was selling sneakers, I'd be so happy if you walked up to me. I'd be like, oh my God, 2J's, let's talk. And so you go from there to here. So you just keep flipping. Flipping, turning it over. At what point you felt like, yo, you know what? I'm going to open a store. Because I went to your store in Vegas. And that shit is big as this Costco.
Bro, but listen, I'm going to say something about your visit when you went to my store in Vegas. I was in the Hood Mall. And I know it took a lot for you to want to go over there, bro. But you left me with some words that motivated me to do more, because I was making money when you came to my store. And I didn't have the bills that I got now. But you said, Jay, I love you, but if you don't move this shit somewhere cleaner, somewhere nicer, I'm never coming back again. And I was like, damn, if Joe feel this way, how many other of my guests feel this way, right? Like, I've had all walks of life, from Celine Dion to royal families. And I had them going into the Hood Mall, and people tell me, yo, I'm taking my jewelry off. So you inspired me, and you pushed me to do more, to do what you saw I was capable of doing, but I wasn't ready. Because you know what
happens? Me as an artist, right? There's times I went to perform at some hood clubs where they shoot everybody, and the fucking crowd is all right. They love Joe Crack, and they go there. But then when they put me in an upscaler place, this flyer, and people feel safe, then the fans come out. Everybody who spends money and pop champagne is like, all right, we're not going to get killed in this location.
Right.
So I'm going to your store. We spending thousands and thousands of dollars. I'm like, man, we got to get out of this shit. Like, you know how many people were scared to death to run through the parking lot to make sure they don't get stuck up? So that's the only advice I try to tell you is like, yo, make a move and try to get to a better place so that Celine Dion, the royal family, all these people could come over and spend big money with you and feel comfortable.
Right.
So, but I'm curious to know at what point you said, yo, I'm gonna open my own store.
So, 6 months into reselling, wifey and I are arguing to the point where, like, it's just counterproductive. So I, like, take a break. I start selling all my clothes to pay for motels, rental cars, food, trying to keep this dream alive, right? The sneaker thing is dry. I'm getting 86 out of stores. I had a lot of people that I had asked for help here because it got bigger than me. And they, and you know how it is. There's leeches, bro. They come in, you teach them game, then they think they could do it better than you. They start undercutting you, throwing your name in the dirt. And I'm thankful that they all did that because obviously that's less people I got to hold down right now. You know what I mean? But I've run out of stuff to sell. I call my boy. I ask him if I could sleep on his couch 2 weeks before a trade show. And I come up with this idea of calling everybody I had ever sold a shoe to. At that point, I only had like 2,000 followers on Instagram. Now it's like 500,000 damn near. And I was like, yo, you guys always complain about the cost of the next shoe. And you never wear the shoes I sell you. So allow me to sell those shoes, put some money towards the next one. And let me just hold $20 off of every shoe. I don't care what how much we sell it for. So I went from like 18 pairs to 684 pairs. I go to this trade show, right? And
Hold up for a second. This is the jewel. Your store has, well, it's a couple of other stores, Fight Club, Stadium Goodies, that has Uberized the sneaker game. Now, with me, I'm a retail store that I got accounts with Nike. I can't do what you do.
Correct.
But you has Uberized where you open a location and you take 20% consignment off of anything you sell.
10.
But you don't have to buy these sneakers. These are independent people who want to get rid of their extra sneakers or want to resell. But being that they come to your clientele, your store, you're the house. You're the bank. You make 20% off of everything that sells. So if I come and sell a Fat Joe sneaker exclusive for $10,000 that nobody's ever seen, you make $2,000 from that. But you didn't have to buy that sneaker. The sneaker was given to you. So you went from 18 pair that you own to 630 pair overnight.
So I go to this trade show. And I meet these people that run the Boulevard Mall. And they're like, yo, you should open a store. I'm like, yo, I don't even have a pot to piss in. They're like, listen, we'll work with you. Come down, talk to us. They show me this store. I'm like, when I get there, I'm like, show me the raggediest store you got. Because I got no money, right? They show me the store, been closed for 7 years, in a hallway that's been closed for 5, right? They charge me $500 a month. The first 3 months, free. They're like, go get a business license. I had made a little bit of money from that show, but by the time I signed the lease, I had $40 to my name. I ain't never put nothing together. I don't know nothing about painting, putting shelves. I'm doing all that shit myself. I make a post. I'm like, yo, I got a feeling this is going to be the hottest shit smoking in Vegas. If you want to see it firsthand, pull up. But that was like my ploy to get people to come down and help me like put the store together.
That's how you start the conversation. If you talk to people long enough, they'll tell you their problems. So you basically say, hey, yo, just come through. Yo, I heard this shit is fire. And bro, they're coming through.
I didn't even know how I was going to pay the $500 a month. To me, $500 felt like $5 million, right? So I make another post, and I'm like, yo, if you got a local clothing brand, pull up on me. I'd love to sell the shit in my store. So then when they would come in and I'm giving them the tour, I'm like, yo, you want the window? It's like $250. Yo, you want right here in front of the store? It's $200. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. 19 brands. I got 19 brands to pay me upfront plus percentage of sales when I first opened the store. Now, I opened this store September 17, 2014. I had $40 to my name that day. By December 31st, I did $1 million in sales. And it's not 20% that I keep. I keep 10. It's the lowest consignment rate in the country.
Wow.
So my whole thing
was...
You
only keep 10%.
Right. Because my whole thing was...
Everybody kept saying 10%, Joe. That's amazing. I know Flight Club and them other ones, it's like 20%, right?
They lowered it. They lowered it a little bit. So my whole thing was, if I could get people to keep feeding me at 10%, at some point I'll have all the shoes. And if I could build a brand in between that, then at some point I'll forever be good. I just got to go out here and keep beating my chest and telling people I'm the guy that sells shoes. I didn't even have a website for a year. I used to do FaceTime appointments.
You got this store. When I went there, it looked like Costco. It was so big. Yes. There wasn't a sneaker you ain't have. And I'm like, oh, I'm really impressed. And you like, Joe, this is this shout out to Vintage Frames on the check-in. So they like, yo, Joe, like, and I'm talking to you and I hear your story. My brother Raul introduced me to you. And I'm like, wow, this is pretty amazing. And from that point on, next thing I knew, you was making a store in New York City with American Eagle. This is the whitest company in the world. Like, when they told me you did that, I was so happy for you. I was like, you know, I went in there. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, oh, my God. Like, so what was the concept of you putting a consignment store collaborating with a company like American Eagle so big? That's like Abercrombie and Fitch.
So I gotta say thank you to Mayor. Because Mayor's the one that opened the door and even gave me the opportunity to tell my story and to talk to the people that put me in front of American Eagle. And like everybody else that's probably listening to this right now, and they're like, American Eagle, that don't make no sense within the culture. But it was never about winning over the people that were already in the culture who knew about me. It was about putting my brand in front of people who ain't never heard about me. You see what I'm saying? And then when I was going to all these trade shows, because I travel all over the world. Off
2 days, let me stop something for you. I don't give a fuck about what nobody thinks. As long as you ain't robbing nobody, you ain't selling no drugs, you this, how you make your money, you make your money. I don't give a fuck what they say. Nah, why you made with them? I looked at that shit because I'm a money guy. Like I've been up, down, but I've been into getting money since I'm 14 years old. That's all I know. So when you made that move, I said, yeah, this motherfucker getting to the fucking money. Like a money guy, a guy who's a hustler, who come from nothing and get money, they not talking about, yo, why he collaborated. Fuck out of here. I'm like, yo, this motherfucker, he better buy me a steak next time I see this motherfucker. He killing it. Yeah, so continue. So you get the shit, and that is on Houston Street.
Houston and Broadway.
Big time. This is
yeah, that's a monumental time. Building. So we get the opportunity to do this little thing with American Eagle. And I'll tell you a funny story. I had ordered an Anajet printer because I wanted to print. My whole thing, I've always had this belief. If I can't keep you in my store for 30 minutes, it's not worth coming back. It's not about the first visit. It's about the second, the third, the fourth, the tenth. Right? So if I got this Anajet printer where you could design your own shirts with all my logos or the jeans or whatever, cool. Right? It helps. So they sent me the printer, but they didn't send me the shirts. I'm like freaking out because I $30,000 machine, right? And I'm like, yo, I'm asking American Eagle, does this thing print on denim? And they're like, yeah. So the first thing I did was I put my logo on a couple American Eagle jackets. I made one post, family wearing it, like showing the logo on the back and me looking forward with the little peace sign. Bro, that one post turned American Eagle denim jackets from an item that had never been a top 50 selling item for American Eagle to a top 3 and sold out every denim jacket in the 5 boroughs in 2 weeks. That one single move got the president of American Eagle, the owner of American Eagle, to come to the store and was like, yo, my man, you need a design for American Eagle. Now, I did a collaboration with American Eagle that came out during quarantine, during COVID, right? Obviously, the marketing wasn't what we anticipated or what we wanted and this and that, but it sold out in a week. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have had the opportunity that I have. Tomorrow, I got a collaboration coming out with Nautica. Nautica, bro. Like, listen.
Talk about that. And Nautica, you got a collaboration coming out.
I'm wearing
the
shit right now. Look, I'm wearing it right now. Reversible buckets, Urban Necessities shirt with the Nautica logo. You know what I'm saying? Like,
Nautica's coming back too.
Bro, when I walked into the meeting, they're like, why you want to do this collab with why? What is Nautica to you? I'm like, yo, I need to bring back that emotion that I had when I fell in love with Nautica. When I fell in love with Nautica, it got me to the point where I felt like I needed to steal it. I used to steal it. I did a terrible job at it.
No, they had a whole crew in New York. They used to steal Polo, steal Nautica. The name of their crew was like the Polo crew. We steal Thurston Howell, all these guys.
I still listen to that album. That was one of the greatest albums ever.
Yo, they used to steal. They used to steal. Polo. That was their crew. They wouldn't. They would just rob that.
One of the best tracks on there is "I Still Live at Home with My Moms."
Look at that. Look at that. So now you and Nautica have a collaboration. Where will it be available at?
So it's going to be available tonight on my website, urbannecessities.com. It'll be available in store tomorrow. It's on Nautica's website tomorrow. And then it's going to hit about 40 different doors, from Dr. J's to City Gear, you know, Band LA out in LA. A couple friends that have shops wanted to carry it. And, you know, it's 22 different pieces that I got to go into their archives and kind of put my twist on it. I did rugbys, J-class jackets, shorts, like I did all sorts of stuff. There was an early link that I'll send you if you want to look at it.
Yeah, I need the link. I gotta buy that shit early. Tell Maya, yo, Maya, I want to buy this shit, man. Come on, stop playing.
Appreciate
you,
bro.
Know I'm not really tech savvy like that, but I'm gonna look at the shit. You send me pictures of all the shit. I'll tell Maya, yo, give me that. You know, I mean, but what an amazing story.
Thank you, family.
And it's just started.
Yeah, it not really has.
You did American Eagle, top seller. Now you got Nautica. Who's next?
Bro, I mean, I'm just sitting here just ready for the opportunities. We did a collab with Stan Sox. Stan's told me that was the most ever reposted product they've ever done. Like, we're going to have, an essential line coming out with Stance at some point. I've done stuff with New Era. I mean, I'm back independent again. I'm not with American Eagle. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm moving the store to Forum Shops. We've taken over a Gap store inside Forum Shops, bro. You know how crazy it is to, I look back, when I was building my store in Fashion Show, there was nights where I was going in, building out, obviously, right? Security coming in. Yo, my man, you're not supposed to be in here. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nah, I own this store. But they remember me from when I was homeless. You know what I'm saying? Or to go from that to, you know, bathing in front of a pool, in front of Forum Shops, to now opening a store that's the biggest store in Forum Shops, square footage-wise. This is crazy, bro. I went from nothing to, even though I've been I was closed for 4 months and was projected to lose 30% in sales this year, to being up over 10% from last year. And I lost 4 months. We're going to be over 80 million in sales in 6 years with this shit, bro. And it started with $40.
You're going to be bigger than that. You're going to be bigger than that. I'm telling you, you're going to be bigger than that. Somebody going to come, one of these Louis Vuittons. You're going to have a collab with one of these Gucci, Louis Vuittons. It's going to be bigger. This shit going, right? And so there's something I do. Right? When I was a kid, we grew up so poor. And the South Bronx looked like a war zone. And we didn't know we was poor because everybody was poor. Like, if you're so fucking poor, as long as you got your mother and your pops and they got some music, fuck it. So right. Kentucky Fried Chicken, keep it moving.
Right.
And so I used to cross the street with my mother and my father holding their hands. And so when I was 10 years old, I was twice the height of my mother and father. It's a big, doofy, fat kid. I hold their hands and I cross the street. And to this day, every time I look outside my car and I see a young Latino kid, a young black kid with their mother, I always say, man, I don't know who that kid could be. This kid could be something. I look at the kid or girl, I be like, she could be something. You know, and I never sleep on that. When I see families together through the struggle, I never ever look at them like, oh, they ain't got no money. They can't make it. I always look at them like,
You don't realize the power of a positive conversation. There was a few positive conversations I had at really dark moments in my life that changed my whole outlook on everything. And as I started growing as a brand, I was really, at the beginning, I was very scared to tell my story. But then I started feeling fake. And I'm like, yo, no, people got to hear this shit. Because people got to understand that they could come from where we come from and be at the same table with all the people that they think they got no business being at that table with, right? One of the things that changed a lot for me was when I started looking at, like, people like yourself, athletes, actors, anybody that I put on a very high pedestal. Like, I look at you and your craft. You've been in your craft over 30 years, bro, right? And the one thing with you is that you go in same time, same energy, same effort every time. And you found creative ways to stay relevant. And you've reached out and you've tried all these other things, right? And now people look at you and they think that you got everything in the world and that you're so accomplished. But what they forgot is that your work ethic ain't never changed. You're putting in the same time, energy, effort into your craft. So when I'm looking at players like LeBron, I'm looking at, you know, actors like Denzel, I'm like, well, damn, man, they've been in this all day long. Like, it's not like they knew everything when they got into it. It took time. It took energy. So when I realized that, I just got consumed with the process. Like, I love the grind, bro. You seen I just went and picked up Vandal shit in New York and drove the shit back myself. You know what I'm saying? Like, I truly love what I do, bro. And I enjoy.
They say when you love what you do, it ain't work.
Right.
And so I'll tell you, I had a clothing line called FJ560, right? And it was named after the first, I had a clothing store. The first thing I did when I was rapping, since Flojo 93, is I opened a clothing store, but I had no accounts. Regular hood gear, whatever. But it was in Melrose, 560 Melrose. And so I made a clothing line called FJ, Fat Joe 560. And we had leather jackets, snorkels. Everybody and their mother was wearing it. And let me tell you something. I seen Jay-Z wearing a snorkel. And I seen Puff Daddy wearing a snorkel. An FJ 560 snorkel. This is before Sean John. This is before Rockaware, right? So now my problem was I had partners that were cool with, some people go, they throw shit against the wall, they don't invest no money in whatever profit they make, they make. That's whack business. That's scared money. So I would sit there with them and tell them, listen, I would sit there and I'd be like, yo, let's invest money on promotions and marketing and let's get more. And they were scared and they were making a lot of money, you know, millions of dollars we were selling of this. I wasn't making the same amount. I was making maybe 50, 100,000, whatever. But that clothing line right there, if they would have invested money on it at the time, Big Pun and Fat Joe talking about it in every song, every video, it would have been $100, $200, $300 million company, but they folded on spending the money. I had fucked up partners. And then, you know, I left the concept. Next thing I know, Puff Daddy got a clothing line. Next thing I know, Jay-Z got a clothing line. They sold them shits for $200, $300 million. That's how they still got money from those moves they made 15, 20 years ago selling those lines. And I was there, but did I give up? I'm gonna back up. Let me do something else. Let me try to do something else. You know, Fat Joe's quote is, You gotta stay in the game. You never know. So now everybody who watched the show, I haven't said it for a long time. You got to be in the game. You never know. Now let me give you a little quick touch up on that. Dr. Dre invents NWA. They on fire. They split up. He goes and gets Snoop Dogg. Starts Death Row Records. He falls out with Suge Knight. Suge Knight takes the whole company. $300 million. Dr. Dre says, you know what? I did it. I could do it again. I don't think I would have gave it up. But he said, yo, I made it once. I'll do it again. I don't want this negative energy. Let me go over it. $300 million. Right? This is a fact. Right? And then he turns around, he finds Eminem. Eminem finds 50 Cent. Let's say the man made 100 million, 50 million, 100. I'm just trying to.
Right.
50 million, 100 million. You would think it's like redemption. The man made it. The man stays in the game. and gets a piece of some headphones that they put out. Now he's a billionaire. So what I'm saying is you got to be in the game.
100%.
You never know. You got to be in the game.
You know, a lot, the when you did the FJ560 shit, bro, that was a wild time. You opened a lot of doors for a lot of people, not even realizing it. And the thing that you got to look back on, which I'm sure you do, which is the same thing with me and some of the things that I've done or people that I've affiliated myself with, is you learned all the ways that you shouldn't be doing it when you get the opportunity to do it again. And that's why your brand and what you got going on with Up is killing it. And it's, bro, I'm excited for what you're doing. Every time I get the opportunity to go back to the city, I try to check in, you know, and I actually have a shoe that I bought from Mayer that was displayed at your store. So
the one that changed colors?
The blue hardwood classic LeBron.
Yo, let me tell you about Mayer, man. Mayer curses me out. I took some of his collection and I put it up in the little showcase we got, and the sun kept hitting it, so it fucked up and discolored this shit. He would never give me a sneaker again. In fact, I went to put new sneakers of mine in the booth, and Mayer was like, no, you're not doing that. My own sneakers. He said, no, you're not putting the gold Drakes in there. You're going to fuck them up.
Well, he's saving your, you know, the value of the shoe for you. But I'm going to show you the shoe. The shoe was cooked. It was cooked. But I got a guy who's really good at what he does, and he brought the shoe back to life.
I'm going
to
need that guy. Because I got a pair of sneakers, my holy grails, just changing colors. They said, you know the guy. Chris Smoke said, yo, talk to 2Js. He know the guy that can refurbish your shit. Yeah. Let me see some sneakers before we get out of here. Some of your holy grails.
So this one here is probably one of my favorite Air Max 1s. It's the BRS Air Max 1. So this one is from 2005. This is like, in my size, this is like a $4,000 shoe. And it happens to be my size. So,
and the smaller size is the more money?
I mean, in some cases, yes. Like 8, 8.5, you know, some women's sizes. And then big sizes go for crazy. You know, 10, 10.5 is the most common size, but it's still a shoe. This is still expensive no matter how you split it. And if you look at it, this shoe's 15 years old. That bubble's still good money.
Yeah, it's crazy because a lot of my sneakers, man, they turn in yellow the bottom. Is there a way to get them clean?
I can fix all that stuff. And you know,
I tell you, you coming over here to get rid of
Yeah, just say the word win.
I can't take it no more. I got a garage. When you come to my shit, you're going to be like, Jesus Christ. Like, what the fuck?
Bro, I'm excited to get it out of there, to document it, to give it the life that it deserves. And I'm
Let me see some more sneakers. Let me see some more sneakers. They probably like, yo, Joe, you fucking this up. Let 2Js. Oh, yeah.
UNC4. This is like an $8,000 shoe in my size. And again, all these shoes I'm showing you are mine. So this one means a lot because I actually, you know, I've been blessed with the opportunity to tell my story at UNC. I go every semester. This year, a little different. I'm doing it through Zoom meetings. But for the last 3 years, I go to UNC to tell my story. And I either wear UNC 3s or now UNC 4s. And the wild shit is I've had students in the classes that I'm talking to, and they're like, yo, I was one of the dudes that got kicked off the team for selling their shoes. So that's one. I mean, this is probably something a lot of people want to see. Dior ones, right? And then the lows. I wear the lows a lot. Then this is where it starts getting crazy. So I don't really know where to start. So I'll start with the cheapest one. LeBron 2 Animal. Only 23 pairs. If I'm not mistaken, no two pairs are alike. This is like 7,000-8,000. LeBron 2.
That's crazy. Silhouette.
Yeah, these are nasty, bro. Like look at the toe box on these joints.
Bring it down.
Yeah, so it's got gold tips. I mean, these are crazy, bro.
Nah, that shit crazy.
So then I'll show you. I think these hit for like 20, 30 bands now. The Freddies.
Freddy Cougars.
Yeah. So Mayor's responsible for this one, even coming back. This is the sample from 2016 Wu-Tang Dunk. This is a $50,000 shoe. So we're going to give this away next month. We're going to give this away.
A $50,000 shoe, that one right there.
This is 50 bands right here.
Who would buy that for $50,000?
I mean,
who's
you got
that either customer?
I have a couple people that would buy this. I mean, I had
Party. Who's your customer? Who comes and buys a 50? Who buys an $8,000 shoe?
So a couple people, either the guy that's middlemanning it for another collector, either.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, would it be a collector? With like, who got money like that? Who says, "Yo, I gotta have that"? Like, I've been offered $75,000 for my TS M&Ms, like, and I didn't sell them, right? I had a guy come to my store every day to buy my Mark Wahlberg joints, like, and offering insane money, but I ain't selling. But who's it? But the, I mean, I'm gonna keep it real.
So a couple drug dealers.
Who's buying a $50,000 pair of sneaker?
So a couple people. The first one is the person that super has it and doesn't care, right? That'll wear it. Then you also have guys that are trying to collect and have all the rare of the rare that would just put it up on a mantle. And you also got the guy that's looking for the guy that falls under those first two scenarios and he wants to middleman it, right? So to me, this is the ultimate reseller starter kit. If you win this shoe, you could sell this for up to $50,000. So that's the whole point. So this,
and
this
I had a story on here last week of a guy. He was a multi-million-dollar drug dealer when he was a kid. He went to jail. He came home. And when he came home, he wanted to start this big gym in the Lower East Side. It's called Conbody. Do you know how he started it? When he was selling drugs, he bought a bunch of Jordans. And it was all in his house in his closet. When he came home, he resold those sneakers.
Amazing.
And that's how he started his gym.
That's amazing. So I'll leave you with one last one. This is my grail of grails. When I first started reselling shoes 8 years ago, this shoe was $1,000. I just looked this shoe up today before I got on your live stream, and it's in the same size. And this shoe is listed on StockX for $88,000 in my size. But here's the kicker. I have the promo sample. So it's not even the normal pair. And I wear these. I wear them all the time. I wore them on my
birthday. Could you sell sneakers that was worn?
I sell some shoes that are worn, yes, because you got to keep in mind, like, all right, here's an example. If this was brand new, this is a $100,000 shoe. But because it's worn, it's probably $50,000 to $60,000. And people are going to be like, damn, I'm saving $40,000. Now, you got to really be into this shit.
You into it. You would probably say, yo, I can't get it nowhere else. It's worth $100,000. I'm going to wear it anyway. So what? A motherfucker wore it once or twice.
Right.
You see, Clark Kent is in on here. Clark Kent is watching.
But now it's getting to the point where it's getting so crazy, and I'm looking at this, right? And I ain't paid nowhere near $80,000 for this. I paid a lot. I could have bought a Camry. A nice loaded Camry for somebody.
Where's
in the family.
Where's the red Jordan? Did you sell the red Jordan you showed me that time?
The Cali joints?
No. You had a red Jordan. I think it was a four.
Oklahoma joints. Yeah, those are gone. Those been gone. But I got more pairs at the. We have like 15.
Those are the flyest sneakers I ever seen in my life.
I got so much stuff in your size, bro. Like I wouldn't want you to come to the store because like you would get wild anxiety in the store now. Like we're running.
Because I'm trying to stay away from all that.
I already know.
You know what I'm saying?
I already know.
I'm trying to stay away from all that. You know, I've been trying to chill. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I used to go.
I know, bro. Yo, do you know how many
people when you come here? But I used to go, like you do in the show. I would do that in the shows. I would do that. I would go to little stores, moms and pop stores in Minnesota, in Philadelphia, in all over. And I would walk in a mom and pop store before. This is before. This is sneaker collectors, if y'all want to know. before people was collecting sneakers like that, very early, I would go into a mom's and pop store. Like, I would look up, yo, where's their mom's and pop store? Fucking water leaking from the ceiling. I would go up there and I would put 10 grand, 20 grand cash on the top of the thing, on the top of the counter. And I'd be like, and they'd be like, what's all this money for? And I'd be like, I want to go in your basement and I want to look at old stuff. They're like, what you mean? It's nothing but garbage and junk.
Right.
Now you can't pull that off.
Right.
Right?
I got one more shoe I want to show you. Do me a favor. Go grab the Jordan 3 that got the UN logo on it. There's this shoe that I did a couple years ago. I commissioned a couple of customizers that actually do work for Nike. So, like, if you get bespokes, these guys are commissioned in Australia to do some of the work. And I grew up, I've told you this a bunch of times, bro. I grew up on you. I grew up on Pond. I grew up on I just that era. And when I got the opportunity to create, the first thing I did was put Pond on a Jordan. I'm going to show you the shoe. He's bringing it back to me right now. It's a black cement 3.
As tight as I am with Jordan and all that, you know, we got cease and desist.
Already
letters when we did the big Pun Jordan logo on all the posters promoting Yeah Baby, we actually got a letter saying, yo, we're going to sue you if you keep using the jump, the Pun jump man. Ooh.
Look,
I think I've seen them before. I've seen you put it up somewhere before.
Yeah, suede. And then I did UN for the cement print.
Sheesh.
Nah, this was everything to me, bro. You made my childhood fun, bro.
You did the right thing. You did the right thing. Nah, you did the right thing. Yeah. You know, I got the Pun medallion with the Pun jump, and he's in diamonds. The whole shit is diamonds. And he is fat too. He got like the belly, everything in rubies. The Pun jump man. That's something. You know, I go to the grave with that. You know what I'm saying? Know.
As you should, bro.
I go to the grave with that. But that's amazing that you did that. Yeah, and that's all legit. That's not like
So this was a black. This was a black cement 3 that I sent them, that I bought from my store, sent it out to them, and then I asked them because, you know, there was a lot of inspiration, a lot of things over the years. A mayor telling me he got a black suede 3. I'm like, man, I ain't never gonna have one of those. I ain't never going to have a UN print on it. So they did all of that for me. And I wanted the old 88 cut. Because to me, that's the best Jordan 3 ever, was that 88. But I had to put the...
Have you ever got an offer for that sneaker?
Nah. I mean, I've had people say, yo, I want to buy it. But I dead the conversation right there. I'm not selling them. I'm like afraid to wear them. You know what I mean? I might make another pair just so I could wear this pair, bro. But I'm ready.
Yo, that's amazing.
Whenever you want me to jump on the plane, throw them shits in the truck and drive them shits back and throw them shits off, I'm ready, bro. All I want to do is work. And I got a lot of people pressing me. They know
I told Mayor, when you ready, ASAP. Whenever you ready, because I bought another crib.
I already know.
God. Alhamdulillah. Congrats. Thank you, Lord Jesus. And so she's not going for it. They're not going for me. Taking the garage. I got a 3-car garage just filled with sneakers. They're not going for that. They're not going for that reincarnation in the new spot.
Right. Well, yo, I could be there as early as next week. Just say the word.
Let's go. Let's go. Come on.
Done. I'm booking my shit. I'll be there Monday.
All right. Let me ask you a question. Could the soles, when they turn yellow, they could get cleaned white?
Yeah, we could do all that. But we got to look at each shoe. And
I'm saying if it's $5,000 sneaker, $4,000 sneaker, it's worth refurbishing that sole, right?
Right. But some people like the fact that they've yellowed out because it shows its age. So in some cases, cleaning it up might hurt it. So, I mean, I know that, I mean, Mayor's already set the guidelines and parameters to how this is going to work for me. Once we get those
how's the Mayor collection doing?
Bro, Mayor said he ain't never made as much money as he did with me in 1 week. He ain't never made... Yo, he like, it was a blessing, bro. I got to do... I was at his house probably a little bit
longer. I ain't gonna lie to you. Mayor and you, y'all inspired me. And I said, you know what? I'm gonna let people have a piece of history. The other day I went in my closet and I only won one cubicle. So I got like
I saw it.
60
bro.
Cubicles, right? Like 100 cubicles. I pulled out so much fire. And I said to myself, I said, yo, these chips had, the box said 1999. The box was 2002. This is shit that been sitting around 20-something years.
A couple weeks ago, you was on a stream with Mayor. And you was showing Terror Squad Air Force One after Terror Squad Air Force One. And you like, yo, I got four of these. I got five of these. I got this. And the bug's been out that I'm coming to grab your pairs at some point here in the near future. And everybody and their mother's like, yo, Jay, how much is this one going to be, bro? Yo, Jay, just make sure. Yo, Jay, like, don't give me the list before you even put them out. Yo, like, it's crazy, bro. And the thing, all I want to do is, again, come down there, pull it out. Give me the little bit of time to document.
So what you feel about, nah, I shouldn't do that. Ask you that question because you might answer it crazy. So let's leave that because,
I just want to tell the story with your shit. That's the important part. I need 5 to 10 minutes with you. Maybe we grab 4 or 5 of these pairs.
Bro, I got a box. But it's in my store in New York. I got a box that Jordan made for me. It's made out of wood. It's a sneaker box. And you know how every Jordan sneaker, you open this shit up and it got Jordan in that.
Yeah.
In the face of the box. Fat Joe face on the box. Nah. With some custom TS Jordans in the box. Disgusting shit. And I never realized with the TS Air Force Ones, I had so much of them. So while I'm going to the closet, it's still like, bro, I can't wait till you come down here.
All them shits here for the high, bro. And they going to sell so quick when they get over here. I'm not mad.
There's certain things I won't get rid of.
Not
because there's certain things that were gifts. There's certain things that I can't do that.
I totally respect that. I mean, just pick those out so I don't see them, so I don't bust your chops when I'm over there and be like, nah, Joe, I don't want to do you like you did Bibby when you was at his house. You know what I mean?
He told me the story.
He comes to the store every once in a while. That shit's hilarious.
He's the best. My brother, God bless you, man.
Same family. So I appreciate you giving me the opportunity on the platform, bro. It means a lot. You already know I got no choice, family.
And I'm going to tell you like a fellow Boricua told me. Boy George, the living legend, told me, siga pa'lante Boricua siempre.
Ya tú sabes, bro.
One love, my brother. Stay up.
Ladies.
You can't make this shit up. This is the big, 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 big show. Shout out to Ciroc. Shout out to Famio. God bless. I gotta go. Keep God first. No God, no wins. Peace, y'all.